You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello there, and thank you for downloading The Agenda's podcast. Today is the 12th of June. And on the show today, we put a really big focus on jet skis because the riders are going to face tighter controls under new regulations issued by the Dubai Maritime Authority there at the Ports, Customs and Free Zone Corporation. Now, as a slightly biased commentator on this, I have to admit, I hate them. I chatted to Rashid Al-Falasi. Now, he's manager at the Maritime Training Centre and he talked me through the new rules. We also found out how operators are trying to encourage responsible riding. That was with Mohammed Ansari from Nemo Watersports Dubai. Meanwhile, producer Zina has attended the AI retreat at the Museum of the Future. She reported back on how Dubai is accelerating the use of artificial intelligence to run the city more effectively. Plus, hundreds of UAE residents are having to cancel their European holidays because they can't get a Schengen visa. Emily Jenkins from DW Travel told us what you can do if you're still waiting. And a big pharma company has come up with a jab that can combat COVID and flu together. We spoke to virologist Professor Ian Jones, who talked us through how that will work. And we discussed the fact that the first gigayacht shipyard could be coming to Ras Al Khaimah. I'm going to admit to something on the show today. I'm coming clean. I am a bit of a jet ski Karen. Now, do you know what a Karen is? My children sort of brought me up to date with what a Karen is. I was a bit like, what do you mean? Why are you calling me a Karen? And it was when I was in the car and I was sort of shouting at somebody who cut me up or something like that. And I had to look it up. Basically, it's a middle-aged white woman who's used to getting their own way and is happy to shout at people when she doesn't get her own way. I was a bit like, wow, kids, I really feel seen on that. You know, apparently there's a sense of privilege, a sort of entitlement in it as well. And I'm definitely fall into that category when it comes to jet skis. I have been known on a perfectly pleasant day on the beach in my bikini to wander down the beach, because I like to do a lot of walking on the beach, to wander down. And if I see young men, it's always young men, behaving badly on jet skis, I have been known to shout at them. I have been known to give them a piece of my mind and to inform them that they need to behave in a better way. Of course, they can't hear me over the sound of their stupid machines, engines. And, you know, they basically just laugh at me because I'm just a crazy old woman to them in a bikini. I'm just a crazy old woman yelling at them for, you know, inarticulately and literally to no end at all because they just ignore me. But yes, I am basically a jet ski Karen. I shout at young men on jet skis for being too noisy. But the truth of it is, there's a bit more to it. It's not just that they're noisy. It's not just that I don't like seeing young people have fun, I promise. They literally are an absolute pain. They go backwards and forwards along the coast. There's nothing to really see here along the coast. You know, it's a delightful beach, but there's no sort of nooks and crannies for them to explore. So they just go backwards and forwards and then backwards and then forwards. And they disturb the wildlife. They disturb swimmers. They disturb literally thousands of people just having a nice time on the beach. I mean, it's not like they can't just go out to sea. You know, the whole point of a jet ski is you go miles, go on, go halfway to the world islands and whiz around there. But they don't want to. They want to be seen. And I think that's what really gets my goat. They want to annoy us. They want us to look up from our nice day on the beach and they want us to look at them because they're showing off. And the worst thing they do, sorry, I'm off on one now. It's hard to stop me when I get going. The worst thing they do is when there are certain areas where they're allowed to come into coast. There's two I know very well. One is just near Dosk, which is the Dubai Offshore Sailing Club. And then there's another one down at the end of Kite Beach near where it's sort of where they're going to build that new big Jumeirah complex. Anyway, near just before you get to Sunset Beach, basically. And what they do is that they come in to that area where they're just supposed to moor and chill, but they don't. They turn round and round and round and round in donuts to try desperately to create some fun for themselves, to create some waves, basically, that they can then, you know, bounce over. Anyway, I need to slow down now because I'm getting overexcited. But yeah, that when they're doing that, that's just incredibly dangerous because, you know, just one, like I said on the breakfast show, just one slip of the wrist and they're zooming down into swimmers and children and onto the beach. And, you know, that also makes me very angry because they are ultimately scaring other beachgoers and they're being really dangerous. So yes, I have been known to go and shout at them. And so I cannot tell you how thrilled I was yesterday. It was like Christmas Day when I was shown the brand new guidelines that are being introduced by the Dubai Maritime Authority to mitigate against the noise pollution and other problems caused by jet skis. So I am clearly not the only person who thinks they're a pain. I'd love to hear from other people on this, by the way. Please get in touch. Tell me I'm not the only jet ski Karen in town. 4001, or you can WhatsApp me on 04871 5500. But yes, earlier I caught up with Rashid Al-Falassi. Now, he is a manager at the Maritime Training Centre at the Ports, Customs and Free Zone Corporation. I rang him up and I said, I need to talk to you as soon as I heard about this new guidelines. And he told me what led them to introduce the new regulations.
We've received numerous complaints from residents and beachgoers about the noise and some safety concerns associated with jet ski use near public beaches. And our aim is to ensure a safe and enjoyable environment for everyone while balancing the needs of water sports enthusiasts as well.
Yeah, I mean, I would love jet skis to be just banned from near the beaches, but I do understand that it's not just my needs that you need to take account for. It's not just my beach. So what are actually included in these new guidelines and requirements, this new circular you've put out?
It's included designated areas for jet ski use, speed limits and operational hours to minimize the noise disruption. Additionally, jet ski operators will be required to have valid license and to adhere to all safety protocols, including wearing life jackets and maintaining a safe distance from swimmers and other beach users.
Are you potentially looking to redirect the use of jet skis away from the public beaches? Is there any sort of sense of moving the machinery away from swimmers and beachgoers?
Yes, it's a part of our strategy. It involves directing jet ski use to congested areas and designated zones away from popular public beaches. This will help mitigate the noise and enhance safety for all beachgoers.
I know this is, again, sort of harking back to something that I would like to see, but I do know that lots of other people do find the jet skis very annoying around the beaches. And especially when they're being misused, they could have the potential to be very dangerous. Would you actually consider banning them near certain beaches? I know that they used to be allowed around the Palm, for example, and now they've been banned from there.
We are considering various measures, including potential bans near specific beaches where jet ski activity poses significant safety risk or causes considerable disturbance. We will evaluate each area case by case and implement the most appropriate measures for each.
So I imagine most jet ski users are pretty sensible. They're pretty law-abiding citizens. And it's just a few people who are causing the problem for everybody else. But if people do disobey these rules that you've issued, are there fines? You know, what can we actually do about it?
Yes, there are penalties in place for those who violate the guidelines. This includes fines. And our goal is to encourage responsible behavior and ensure the safety and enjoyment of all beach visitors.
What should residents do if they spot a jet ski behaving badly?
We rely on community vigilance to help us maintain a safe and pleasant beach environment. We are expecting residents to report any reckless or dangerous jet ski behavior to local authorities immediately. Provide details such as location, time, description of the jet ski will help the authorities to take prompt action.
And that are the words, or those are the words, I should say, of Rashid Al-Falassi, manager at the Maritime Training Centre at the Ports, Customs and Free Zone Corporation. We are going to, in the next few minutes, chat to someone on the other side of this argument, because I'm conscious that I have a very sort of strong view on it, and I don't want to be the only person talking on this. So we are going to speak to the team from Nemo Water Sports Dubai. Mohammed Ansari is going to be joining us to explain, you know, how he manages to regulate his jet ski users. But I have to say, joyfully. Lots of people are getting in touch with me, and it is lovely. It's heartwarming for me that people agree with me, because it might mean that we get to see some of these jet skis banned. Farhad, a man, says, I really dislike jet skiers by the beach as well. They're so annoying and loud. You're definitely not a Karen. You are right. Laura says she loves my topic today. Thank you very much indeed. Amanda says, you're exactly right, Georgia, but you know as well as I do that these guidelines are going to be ignored. I'm really hoping they won't be ignored. Another person here, someone's written quite a long message. I can't get the name on it. I don't know who sent this message. Oh, no, it's David. David says he's totally on my side. Yes, jet skis are a terrible risk. They're simply water motorbikes. But unlike motorbikes, there's no proper courses or licensing on how to ride safely and observe your surroundings. They're also relatively lightweight with really powerful engines, and they can skim and dip very fast, causing fatalities or life-changing injuries to innocent swimmers. Most beach resort hotels will simply not have them due to the risk and pollution. Get these banned except for users with licenses. Another person, Bassam, a man. I'm just worried it's a really female thing. That's what it is. Bassam, you're definitely not alone. Some also are going into areas which are designated for kayaking, stand-up paddleboarding, or even for long-distance swimmers. Now, they cause waves and also awful noise, disturbing everyone. Keep your comments coming. We're really enjoying them. Really lovely to get everyone else's views on this. A couple of people have sent in another message. Jules desperately doesn't seem keen on jet skis.
It's a big ocean, and of course there's space for everybody, but as a keen swimmer, I do feel very intimidated that these things are flying around. Even though I can swim within roped off areas, it only takes one mistake or a lack of control, especially if you're a tourist and you're not used to using the jet skis, to find yourself in the wrong part of the beach. So it would be nice to be a bit more controlled, maybe send them further out where they are less of a potential danger to the swimmers and bathers.
Jules, thanks very much for that comment. We are jet ski Karens today, and we are proud of it. Get in touch. Or maybe you're not. Complain.
This is The Agenda on Dubai i103.8.
With the Economic Security Centre of Dubai, shared responsibility for a secure economic environment.
OK, we're discussing jet skis on the radio today because the Dubai Maritime Authority has issued guidelines to mitigate against the pollution, noise and otherwise, caused by the machines. Now, it's a circular, and it urges jet ski users to avoid all sources of noise, and it calls on them to avoid causing harm to public safety, the comfort of residents, users of waterways and people who are on the beach. They say that they should avoid unnecessary proximity to the beach and coastal residential areas to reduce disturbance and congestion. Now, finally, I now know I'm not the only person to hate jet skis. We have managed to find allies, thanks to being on the radio. But what else can be actually done about them? Earlier I spoke to Mohammed Ansari. Now, he is the operations manager for Nemo Water Sports, who are based in the fishing harbour in Umm Sakeem. We got in touch with him because we wanted to find out how popular jet skiing is, and also, you know, get a sort of alternative voice on the radio, because I am being very anti and it's important to hear the other side of this conversation. So Mohammed Ansari told me that jet skiing really is a very popular activity.
In a year, we are doing around 50,000 to 100,000 people, depending on the season, of course. And I see a lot of people asking for jet skis right now is because it's completely safe. It's a beautiful machine which is doing well in terms of the product. And I really think it'll keep picking up is because I can see the numbers growing and growing and growing.
I love your description of it as a beautiful machine, whereas I just want them all to be piled into a huge pyre and burnt down so I never have to see one ever again. I mean, obviously, I'm not the only person out there who's finding them a bit tricky at the moment. One of the reasons why these guidelines have been introduced is because people were complaining. What do you think of the regulations introduced by the Maritime Authority?
I really think that Dubai Maritime is doing every step to ensure safety of every individual. I see that recently circular number 12 was announced by Sheikh Dr. Saeed, emphasizing rules and regulations for all personal watercraft. We see changes already. Police patrols are increasing. Glad to see the amount of random checks done by police. I can see hefty fines are being imposed on those who are not following rules and regulations. And plus, also for your knowledge, that we have installed GPS and speed controllers as per the announcement by DMA. And this is a great step to keep up everyone's safety. Speed controller in general is a great way to control the speed of guests who are going out of zone. So basically, we can avoid people going in beaches. And we can, you know, we will not be allowing them to go more near to yellow boyas, which is a great way to keep jet skis out of the zones.
So when someone comes to rent a jet ski from you, are there, you know, do they have to have been on one before? You know, are there regulations? What are the age restrictions?
Age restrictions are very simple. You have to be 16 and above to drive the jet ski. And if you are a passenger, you have to be above 5. And our tour starts from Umsukim 2, as I told you earlier, and it's accompanied by one experienced instructor, which can take maximum of 4 jet skis as per the DMA rules. And, you know, we start with the safety briefings, a few mandatory DMA rules, which we pass on to the customers. Basically, always wear life jackets, wear your kill cords, keep distance from other jet skis, not allowed to go more than 4 knots in the marina. And we stop at Burj Al Arab outside the yellow boya, at least 50 meters of distance from the yellow boya. And then we quickly go towards Atlantis, keeping the distance. And then again, 50 meters away from the boya. Then we head back to marina.
So you guys are clearly running a responsible enterprise where you encourage your riders to, you know, that everyone's sticking with an instructor ultimately and doing the right thing. So who are the... I want to, I had quite a strong word there. I was going to use it. I don't think I should use it on the radio. Who are these very badly behaved people who are misbehaving ultimately, who are causing all of the disruption coming into the shore, admittedly in areas where they're allowed to come into shore, but then they're playing right next to the beach?
See, it all depends on how all the personal watercrafts are controlled. And it depends on every individual. It seemed like cars. You see a lot of supercars, they rev up outside the area, disturbing the neighbors and so on. It's the same way with the jet skis. You know, if you take out the jet ski out of water and you keep revving up, then of course, people will be bugged by it. But if you're using it in the water and you're using it in constantly in the right way, it is not going to annoy you for sure. So now, if you see, mostly the jet skis are being misused by the private jet skis. It's not because, you know, they want to do it. It's mostly because they are not well educated enough about these rules. So I can already see the changes by DMA. Now they have imposed the circular to everyone, which means every renewal, they will be given this circular and they will be going through classes. They will be learning more about it. So, of course, they will start controlling themselves.
When you see jet ski users behaving badly, is it just a small sector of the community who are doing it? Does everyone within the community, does everyone know who it is and what they're getting up to? Is it, I mean, is it young lads ultimately?
Right. So see, Nemo Water Sports has been operating past 10 years, over a decade now. And we hardly have these kinds of complaints is because we follow a certain area where to go and when to come back. The same way we have lots of private jet skis which go out and they come back peacefully without any issues. But there are people who may be, you know, given the licenses and they're out there and they might be going to the beach because they are not aware of it. But now what I see is increasing patrols outside. The police are stopping them. They're issuing hefty fines. And, you know, these fines are definitely helping us is because we can see reduced jet ski in Jumeirah 5 on the beaches. I can already see the jet skis are, you know, almost 100 meters away from the yellow line of the swimming area, which is a great thing already.
Mohammed Ansari there, operations manager for Nemo Water Sports Dubai. Now, lots of people have been getting in touch, including Mark. He belongs to a swimming community and has had to deal with the jet skiers. He called in to the program to say this.
We do swim beyond the lifeguard control, but level with the rope so that we can go down all the other beaches. There are yellow hats about 50 meters out, which demarcate where motorized vehicles are not supposed to go, come any close to the ropes. The jet skis come within those areas where there's paddle boarders as well as long distance swimmers. And basically, they've been quite aggressive. there are lots of young kids and people on the beaches, you know, every day. And at that beach in particular, I swam inside the rope the other week. It wasn't safe. You know, the guy did a high-speed run right near the rope, all the way down the length of the beach. And another one did a sharp U-turn against the rope. I mean, it's just really dangerous. These guys are not professionals. They're young kids, most of them. We all know what can happen if they're not fully in control, or they have a moment where they're not in control. And if they're trying to play on the edge of what is a public swimming area, then it's an accident waiting to happen.
Mark, thank you so much for getting in touch with us. Really appreciate it. I think it's Mike. Thank you so much for getting in touch, for calling us. We're getting so many comments.
This is The Agenda.
On Dubai Eye 103.8, the UAE's number one talk radio station.
Yes, welcome back to The Agenda. And government department across Dubai say they're accelerating the use of artificial intelligence with an aim to run the city more efficiently. Really interesting stuff. Dubai Municipality have announced their AI roadmap. Apparently, they're going to be applying AI in everything from construction to waste and sewage management. Intriguing. And this was all announced at the AI retreat in Dubai yesterday. I'm delighted to say that Zina Zalamaya attended and has all the details. Well done for getting in. It was quite exclusive, Z.
Yeah, I just registered. But, you know, it was very, very interesting. It was like a mini MBA. Ooh. I just absorbed all the knowledge. Microsoft was there. Google was there. All the big tech companies were there.
By the way, you did have to be invited to register.
Really?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I promise. It was quite difficult to get into.
Just went through the doors. No. Yeah, it is quite exclusive, but there were so many people there. It was actually packed. It was held at Emirates Towers and also at the Museum of the Future. So what it was kind of a boot camp slash conference, and it discussed all things AI, from how it's being used now, how it's going to be embedded in everything we do in the near future, and where we draw the line in terms of the ethical use of it. And His Excellency Omar Al-Ulama is the UAE Minister of State for Artificial Intelligence, Digital Economy and Remote Work Applications. He gave a keynote speech yesterday, but he's also been talking to Bloomberg about the significance of this AI retreat.
The AI retreat is actually a Dubai-focused event. Mm-hmm. Dubai and Design Sheikh Hamdan wisely took a very interesting direction that I think is global leading. The first is focusing on quality of life as the main driver for AI deployment. Second is being the fastest go-to market for AI, especially AI that affects quality of life. And third, being a talent-focused ecosystem. Dubai currently boasts the biggest number of unicorns, the highest number of AI companies and startups, and as well as a talent ecosystem that really is pioneering on the global front. So this retreat really bolsters that.
Okay, so along those lines, what type of initiatives, what type of strategies were announced?
So earlier, there was the Dubai Municipality AI roadmap that was announced, as you mentioned. And there's also something in the education space. So Samsung signed an agreement with the UAE's AI office under the Ministry of AI. And the goal is to roll out AI lessons as part of their extracurricular activities in schools across the Emirates. We're talking about private and public schools, Georgia. So they're starting with this pilot project beginning in August. And I've been speaking to Shafi Alam. He's a director at Samsung Gulf.
The course entails mainly the basics of coding. We also have some gamification so that, you know, the students can compete with each other, come up with the projects based on the learnings that they're getting, and show their interest and say that, you know, they want to learn more about AI. We will shortlist a small group of students, initially 40 to 50 in each batches. Probably we'll do 3 batches first. And then based on the learnings and feedbacks from all the stakeholders, including students and their parents, we will work with a wider range of schools to make it bigger.
And they also have a program, Georgia, for graduates and professionals who are looking to upskill and add AI proficiency to their resume. So here's what Shafi said about that.
This certification will help them get into the job market. So this program is very advanced level. Students already have some knowledge of machine learning and AI. And this program is really for the professionals. They can use this certification and get into job market.
So you know what? My kids are being... So the teacher in my kids' school is saying that we should only have iPads as tablets. So that's the requirement. The eighth generation iPad is like the model that we should get. So everyone's on the same page. So with Samsung entering the market now with the private and public schools rolling out these AI lessons, schools might change their minds because essentially they're going to try to get these kids to use Samsung products.
Wow, you get a sense there of how they want to, each of these tech companies is trying to sort of dominate the space. And I suppose the earlier you catch hold of a young person, or the more likely they are to stick with your products going forward. I am now so firmly in the Apple ecosystem, I don't think I can ever escape. It's like I'm in the orchard and there's no gate. Like I'm never emerging. They have everything. Like, how would you even transpose, 3 trillion photographs and videos? I don't think you can do it.
You're one of them.
I am one of them now. You're not, are you?
No, I'm a Samsung user, but I also use other, I'm not exclusively Samsung.
You're just easy.
Android, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's one of the announcements. Expect more announcements from different departments and industries in the AI space. And the AI Retreat is now an annual event. So hopefully we get invited to next year's event.
Fingers crossed. Hello there. Welcome back to The Agenda. Right. Are you having trouble getting on holiday because you haven't got a visa? Apparently, it's a real issue out there. Literally hundreds of UAE residents having to cancel their European holidays because they just can't get a visa appointment. People have been trying to book for months, but the reality is that demand is outstripping supply at VFS Global, who are the sort of, the one-stop shop for a Schengen visa. And the reason for that is because the European countries just aren't opening up more slots. VFS could easily get the staff in. They could easily process the visas, I'm sure. But the reality is that the European embassies aren't actually opening up opportunities. Now, the UAE has seen a 25% growth in visa demand in the last full calendar year. And then the year before that, there was an 18%. Oh, no, that is an 18% rise over 2019. So we are very much back to pre-COVID levels, plus some. And that demand means that there is just too many people going for too few appointments. Our colleague Natasha is one of the people affected.
We had originally planned to go to Germany. We'd gone through the entire process of applying for the Schengen visa in terms of getting it in at least 15 days before the date of travel, etc. But it's taken almost a month for us to get our passports back. And as a result, we had to cancel all our plans. So yeah, it's been quite frustrating this year in terms of travel, purely because the entire process is taking way longer than it normally does. And it's very frustrating because as an applicant, you should be informed there are delays, etc. But we weren't informed. So we went ahead with the application, hoping to travel as soon as the break started. But we haven't been able to do that.
And then, of course, there's the expense because it isn't free to apply for a visa. Okay, what can you do if you're still waiting, you're still hoping to go to Europe for your holiday and you still haven't heard? I'm joined now by Emily Jenkins, who's head of product development at DW Travel. One of our favourite travel person, our travel guest. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, that's nice to be the favourite.
Oh, well, you're our favourite this week. Okay, what type of delays are we seeing? Because obviously we've heard anecdotal stuff. You are very much at the front end of this.
Yeah, so we, always, are seeing a high demand for trips to Europe for the summer. We actually recently conducted a survey with our DW Travel customers, and more than 41%, I think, their response was the plan was that they were going to Europe on their next holiday. Our team have reported that at the moment, the next available slot for a Schengen visa appointment that they have seen is the end of August, start of September.
So that means no summer holiday for you unless you've already applied.
Yes. The other thing too, which I will just add to that, is that we have found if they have managed to find available slots and get them sooner, that the processing time is up to 30 to 40 days, when normally it's between about 15 to 20.
Because what people do is they check every single morning, don't they, to try and get a cancellation, and they desperately try to slide themselves into it. I have been in this position. Weirdly, I didn't manage to get a visa to India once, I think because I'm a journalist. And, I was desperately trying to get an appointment and, I missed out on the holiday. So I know how it feels. It's so frustrating, especially if you're going to lose money on it. Mm. Who is being affected mostly by this experience? I suppose it's quite a lot of the people living in the UAE.
Yes. So, I mean, anyone that requires a Schengen visa, which is a huge amount of countries. So I think, the tough thing with it is you do, as you said, in order to get the visa and apply for the visa, there's quite a large amount of documentation required. And part of that documentation is also your travel plans. We have seen that people have been getting rejected because they haven't had an actual hotel booking or a flight booking. So the embassies are also double checking that if these bookings are dummies, they are not necessarily approving the visa as well. So you do have to, as you say, put up that money at the start, not just for the visa fees, but also for the cost of the holiday in order to be able to go through the process.
It's such an odd situation because you would have thought that these countries, these European countries, would want the tourism dirhams, the tourism dollars. What can people do if they're caught up in it? So like if they put it in and they're just waiting, do you get informed if it's being processed?
I mean, generally it says under process, but there's not always a lot of information that is shared as to why it's being delayed or what the issue might be. Sometimes they do come back and ask for additional documentation, but more often than not, you find out after the fact that it has been rejected or if it's been accepted. I guess one thing just to note that the main conversation we're having here is about leisure holidays and tourism visas. It is slightly different in terms of business visas as well. Our visa services team does contact the embassies, and there's another whole process there regarding, you know, if the business you're going to see is a registered business of that country, then they can help to get your visa slot sooner in order to be able to go and do that as well.
So is that the only workaround though? If you're actually travelling for business, there's no way of hopscotching the queue or jumping the gun or getting in early. I mean, literally, if you don't get an appointment, you just need to mentally accept you're not going to go.
Yeah, I think, again, our team is sitting on these systems all day, every day. So when an appointment does come up, they can see it and they, you know who they need to call or if they need to make that appointment for a customer that we have that may be waiting.
Yeah.
So that is, I guess, you know, that's what the job is.
They're sitting. Yeah, that's what they're
processing
doing.
Visas.
Yeah.
You know, you can apply for a Schengen visa up to 6 months prior to your departure or your planned date. One thing, I guess, also just to note is this is not a new conversation. Most summers, we have a very similar conversation around delays, longer processing times, etc. I think we are in a situation at the moment where you also have...
Don't worry about
summer
the
peaks.
Don't worry about the beeps. No, I beep all the time.
Not only the summer peaks, but you know, there is a much stronger demand for travel at the moment, as we can see across the board. Like, yeah. You know, we are seeing significant increase in terms of our volumes, not just to Europe, but for people traveling in general. So,
do you know, it's got to that point where I think if I needed to get a Schengen visa, and you've got that weird sort of catch-22 where you can only apply 6 months. Within 6 months. And yet if you apply any later than 3 months, you're not going to get it. So there's a sort of sweet spot that you have to pick.
Yes.
I'd almost choose not to go on holiday to Europe. Is that what you're seeing? Are people just looking for alternatives?
We're still getting a lot of inquiries for Europe. Gosh. People asking to go and if we can and help. As I said earlier, the top response we got for people where your next holiday will be was to go to Europe. I bet it was 41%. And after that was Asia at 33%. But everywhere else, so North America, Indian Ocean, etc., we were seeing less than 5% as a response to that.
So the problem is that if demand is still strong, it's not going to put them off. These European countries aren't going to go, hang on a sec, our visa system isn't fit for purpose. We need to increase it because it's not having an impact.
No, and I think if you look at even at the moment, you know, obviously our proximity to Europe, it's, you know, in some cases a 5-hour to a 7-hour flight. So it's not hugely far away. But once you do get a visa into one country, that does give you access to other countries from, to be able to travel around. So, I think that obviously is another draw card for Europe, that you can get a visa for one place and then you in the Schengen system and you can and go to multiple cities or multiple countries, which I think has a big appeal. Also, if you have a look at the increased airlift from the UAE into Europe, there is obviously a demand for it. I mean, you know, we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago around how it feels like everyone's going to Italy this year for summer.
That's the business breakfast. two-thirds of the business breakfast going to Italy.
But then if you look at the number of airlines flying there, like all of the international carriers fly. Dubai goes to 5 different airports. You've got Emirates flying there, Etihad, Air Arabia, and the prices are good for the flights. So I do understand must be getting, why people want to go.
Yeah, and people must be getting the visas. If they're filling the plane. So, the system is working to a certain extent. It's just so disappointing for those people who, didn't have the opportunity to plan ahead, or a bit like me, just totally inefficient, which is what happened with me in India. Yeah.
I think one other piece, though, one other point is obviously try and plan as far ahead as you can. That is obviously a big part. But if you can be flexible as well, so if you can go into one country and out of another, sometimes if you flip that around, the country that you're going into might be a bit easier. So I know that we have seen that it's been a bit easier to get appointments for the Netherlands, for example, or Italy. So I think if you can have a look at what your itinerary looks like and then maybe change it a little bit where you go and spend a couple of days somewhere and then move on to the next place, you might have a bit of luck.
Ooh, that's interesting. Just the Netherlands is a bit easier.
That's
Any
the
others?
One we've seen. But that's again, we still also have no guarantee at the moment on the processing times.
Okay, no worries. Always lovely to have you in, Emily. Thank you so much for your time, as ever. Emily Jenkins there, Head of Product Development at DW Travel. Sounds like, although they don't have workarounds, they do have a very good visa department. So, Emily, thank you very much indeed for your time.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley.
On Dubai Eye 103.8, the UAE's number one talk radio station.
Hello there and welcome back to The Agenda. Right, we're turning now to an international health story, but it's got really far-reaching implications because the massive pharmaceutical company Moderna is celebrating the successful trial of a combined COVID and flu vaccine. It's called mRNA-1083. Snappy. It combats 2 A strains and 1 B strain of the flu in older adults, plus, of course, coronavirus. Now, Moderna has been banking on these new vaccines to make up for vastly lower demand and sales for its COVID shot because we don't need it anymore. But what does that actually mean for us patients? How soon would we be getting this injection? How soon would we maybe want it? Is it the type of thing that we need? To talk through that, I'm joined now by Ian Jones. He is a professor of virology at the University of Reading in the United Kingdom. He is our go-to vaccine man. Hi, Ian. Lovely to speak to you. How are you?
Morning, Georgia. I'm fine, thank you.
Tell me a little bit more about this this Moderna vaccine. How big a deal is it that it seems to have passed this latest trial?
It's at this particular stage, it's only a moderate deal, I would say. And that's because the preliminary data was available from October last year. That data showed that the clinical trial should work, but it wasn't actually the clinical trial. And the updated news at this point is that the trial did indeed work with a relatively large number of people, 8,000 in all. And relatively good results. The combination vaccine, as you mentioned, was shown to be as good as taking either of the vaccines separately. And in fact, the data from the trial was actually slightly better in the test vaccine case than it was in the controls, those individuals who had each vaccine separately. It's difficult to say when it will actually come on stream. It may vary from country to country. In the UK here, it's being mooted for release next year, not this year. And I think the main advantage for individuals is that it gets you 2 shots for 1. So you simply don't have to worry about going for a vaccination as frequently as you otherwise would. And I guess the last point to make would be that, if it works for a combination of 2, it might well work for a combination of more than 2. And so down the line, perhaps we can imagine a vaccine for a whole number of respiratory viruses, all given in a single shot.
Is this the first time that we've seen the flu vaccine in an mRNA form? And is that of importance?
It's not the first time. No, the Moderna itself has piloted, and as have the other RNA companies, flu vaccines, because the flu vaccine market is relatively large. It's guaranteed year in, year out. We always update the strains, as you know, and then release them ahead of the winter season. And so it's a guaranteed source of revenue. And indeed, the data there, as for this trial, indicate that the performance of the vaccine is at least as good, if not slightly better, than the so-called traditional vaccines, which would largely be virus itself, which has been grown up and then inactivated in some way.
Going forward, has mRNA become the sort of go-to science to create vaccines now? Do you think the point has been so well proven now that it's just, you know, part of the course?
Yes and no. It certainly is a very attractive technology. So I think we covered this during COVID times, but you don't need all of the bio facilities to grow lots of cells and viruses. It can all be done in a test tube with defined chemical ingredients, and that's technically its major advance. It doesn't fix the problems of diseases which are not vaccinatable. So HIV, for example, has failed to date to provide any sort of reasonable vaccine response. And I don't think RNA can change that. Similarly, there are some vaccines, particularly bacterial vaccines, which are quite complex. They have a number of ingredients in them. Some of them, in fact, that you can't make with RNA. And so whilst it does have its niche, and I'm sure it's going to be successful from infectious disease across into cancer, for example, nevertheless, it's not going to fix the entire field of vaccinology.
Are there lots of companies, including Moderna, you know, trying to create the sort of COVID flu vaccine? It was sort of considered an almost a silver bullet a few years ago, but we've all calmed down so much about vaccines and COVID that it's sort of not front of mind as in the same way as it used to be.
Well, I think the updates, of course, there have been some recent updates you may have covered or noted. For example, we have a much better, respiratory syncytial virus vaccine now. That's a common problem in children during the winter months and indeed in older people. There are better vaccines for another respiratory pathogen called human metapneumovirus, a whole number of these. The vaccine area remains a very important one because, of course, it is prevention, not cure. An important thing to remember that when you take the vaccine, you haven't got the disease. It's to prevent the disease at a future date. So it is the ideal form of therapy. But as I mentioned earlier, the entire field is complicated. It covers bacterial, viral, and parasite vaccines, and only some of those are suitable for further developments with RNA. But yes, as an accepted technology, absolutely.
Really interesting field. Thank you so much for joining us on the line this morning. That is Ian Jones, Professor of Virology at the University of Reading in the UK, speaking to us here on the agenda on the back of the fact that the massive pharmaceutical company Moderna is celebrating what they say is a successful trial of combined COVID and flu shot. And I really remember it must be about 3 years ago now when we were first talking about the COVID shot and everyone was saying, yeah, realistically in the future, it will be a sort of combo. And now finally we are seeing that reality. And it sounds like that shot could be available at least in the United Kingdom as soon as next year. So many more vaccines coming to market. Very interesting indeed.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello, yes, and you're listening to The Agenda. Georgia here. We are going to turn our attention now to a really interesting story. I really like boats. So whenever I hear about boats being built here, I don't know why I get excited. It's not like I get to go on them. But it turns out that the company behind the Heart of Europe resort complex, that's the one out on the World Islands in Dubai, have announced like a brand new exciting project. The company is called Kleindienst Group, and they've signed a strategic MOU with Ras Al Khaimah Ports, and they're going to establish a maritime facility in the Emirate. The aim is to build giga yachts, these seahorse villas, those are the ones that are sort of above the sea and under the sea. They're also going to build ferries and, you know, the less glamorous side of things, tugboats. If the project goes ahead, it will be the first giga yacht shipyard to be constructed outside Europe. So a big, big deal. Earlier, I caught up with Joseph Kleindienst, who is the I'm going to say that again. Joseph Kleindienst, who is founder and chairman of the group, he started by talking me through the meaning of a gigayacht.
A yacht bigger than 90 meters are named gigayachts, and there are only around 100 out there in the oceans.
So we're talking about some of the biggest vessels in the world, and you are going to be developing a shipyard essentially to build those in Ras Al Khaimah.
Yes, correct. Today, they are only built in Europe, and the leading countries for building super yachts and giga yachts are Germany, Netherlands, and Italy. There is where most of this knowledge sits. We have to transfer knowledge from Europe to UAE, to Ras Al Khaimah, and the supply chain, the generators, engines, navigation equipment, safety equipment, majority of the material, engineering, design, and so on, sits in Europe. To transfer this know-how, we have decided also to build a maritime university in the UAE, at an academy actually, and to partner with European academies for knowledge transfer.
Wow, we get a sense of how big this project is, because the gigayachts is only one component out of four. My understanding is that you're also going to be building these seahorse villas. For people who haven't heard of those, what are they?
First of all, three of these sections will cater the heart of Europe. Heart of Europe owns today 23 different vessels, and we release some more from the market. And on completion of Heart of Europe and some other projects which are already in the pipeline, we need around 200 vessels. And the decision was to increase our capacity. We are having a shipbuilding facility in Dubai today to increase this capacity significant, and to sign a facility in Ras Al Khaimah with rag boats, 1.3 million square feet, which makes it one of the biggest in the Middle East. Floating seahorse villas are villas floating in the ocean with one level fully submerged with two big windows into the ocean. We are building 70 of them right now here in Dubai, and the 63 will be fully constructed in Ras Al Khaimah.
How soon are you expecting all this building to start? Because I suppose you first have to create the factories.
There's an existing smaller facility on the land already, which partially can be used, and we can start building the 63 remaining floating seahorse villas, which are not under construction in Dubai already, in this year. So this will start 2024. The gigayacht needs a huge warehouse, actually, and it's under design, and the design and the approvals and construction will take more than a year. So 2025, the gigayacht will start built in Ras Al Khaimah.
You mentioned there the Heart of Europe project needing more vessels. Of course, you're also going to be building the slightly less glamorous boats at this shipyard as well, your tugs and your ferries. And what will they look like, and what are they going to be used for specifically?
So right now we are using six working vessels, also barges, tug, and dredgers, and we need to do more than double this number for Heart of Europe and other projects. These buildings will happen in Ras Al Khaimah. So we are in stage to prepare drawings, to get the approvals in place, material sourced, and the workforce organized. Then one section will focus on ferries. We're having one ferry, 34.5 meter in length, 200 for 200 passenger, and built right now in our Dubai facility. We need five more of them. They will be built in Rak, but also touristic sailing boats, fishing boats, and diving boats, because Heart of Europe has 28 coral reefs in the making. And Dubai has announced and started already to construct a huge reef in its ocean, 60 square kilometers unheard. And this will, of course, attract the diving industry to come. We want to cater the diving industry from Heart of Europe.
So what's so interesting is that you've decided to make sure that these boats are quite literally made in the UAE. Was that a decision? What sort of led you to that decision? How come you didn't just decide to
by the boats in?
The maintenance of the vessels and the sustainability drive we are having in front of us. So the if it only would have been about buying vessels, the decision would have been to partner with other shipyards, get long-term deals in place and buy these vessels. But the maintenance is a different ballgame. These vessels, they are running 24/7 and they need permanent maintenance and upgrades.
So in the past, I'd spoken to other shipbuilders, to Gulfcraft, for example, and they said that the sort of market for boats in the UAE really expanded tremendously during COVID because people wanted to go out on the water, but they wanted privacy as well. You know, you've got that sort of sense of people wanting to be away from the public. They wanted their own space. I mean, clearly with this massive investment, you see a future on the seas. How would you assess the future as you look ahead when it comes to life on the open water?
You look at the supply of marinas. We understand the marinas in pipeline here in the UAE, but in a much bigger number in Saudi. And then you count how many mooring spaces for giga yachts are already on the drawing boards, and then you can calculate what is coming. And from the not even 100 owners of giga yachts, quite an important number is from the Middle East. And in the past, if they wanted to sit with the designers and engineers and visit their vessel during build, they had to travel to Europe with language barriers and so on. In future, they come to Iraq and see their vessel in the making in their own region. And it's easier then to maintain the vessel. If somebody wants a different outfit, everything can be done here in Ras Al Khaimah in the future.
Joseph Kleindienst there, the chairman and founder of Kleindienst Group, who has signed a strategic memorandum of understanding with RAK Ports, and they have those plans to build that giga yacht shipyard right here in the UAE. Absolutely fascinating stuff. The Agenda is live Monday to Friday from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m.